We can be a generation unto preservation. We as a church must have needful ministries to make a difference, not only in the culture outside of the church, but also for the culture that is inside our own church family. I want to cover a simple fact with you. This is a fact. It's not a Doug fact. This is an historical fact. Ready? There has, is, and always will be war on planet Earth. That's just how it is. As long as there are nations that have people, there will be armies that provide defense for those nations. And there's no getting around this. There is a time for war and a time for peace, as Ecclesiastes 3:8 states. And with this in mind, I want to, last week we covered a needful ministry, reaching out to the homosexual community. This morning we're going to cover reaching out to the soldier. There was a military, I'm going to give you five reasons, five benefits, five pluses that we have in reaching out to the soldiers that we have contact with. There are five good reasons why we should be doing that. Number one, soldiers understand submission to authority. Soldiers understand submission to authority. There was a military leader that Jesus encountered one day near a small town called Capernaum. And he had a servant that was paralyzed, and he loved his servant. And he came to Jesus for healing. And in this account, the centurion mentioned something to Jesus in Matthew 8 and 9, which is the first point of the argument to reach out to the military. He said, "For I too am a man under authority with soldiers under me, and I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my slaves, do this, and he does it." He exposes the fact that all military forces everywhere are structured with authority, and they do understand it. The reason I'm emphasizing this as a ministry plus is to reach out to the military is because respect for authority is deeply part of a soldier's life, just like in Christianity. You know, in Christianity, when you're reaching out to someone in the military, they better understand other examples of authority in the Christian's life. For example, Christ received all authority following his resurrection when he said, "All authority has been given unto me in heaven and in earth." They can understand that, I believe, to a deeper degree and accept that. Ephesians 1:20 and 21, "And he brought about in Christ, he raised him from the dead and seated at the right hand of the heavenly places, far above all authority and power and dominion and every name that is named, not only in this age, but in the age to come." To the soldier who has been living under authority for years, who knows that there is different rank and file, they can understand the same way a commander-in-chief, they can also understand Jesus as commander-in-chief. It's not as hard a transition than if you are a rebellious one who's completely hostile to authority figures, beginning with your parents and everyone else in society. Elders have authority to lead the church family. 1 Peter 5:5, "Younger men likewise be subject to your elders." The military, for a good part of that, understands this. Hebrews 13:7, "Obey your leaders, submit to them who keep watch out over your souls." You know, when you're in the military, you trust the command typically of the one who's above you. They tell you to be here at a certain place at a certain time. Be prepared for that. You trust them because your life is put into their hands. And those under you are trusting you, your team, and the generals are the head of those teams. But in Christianity, you have the elders as ordained by the Holy Spirit through the qualifications. Your children are to yield to the more matured in the society. In Titus 2, 3, and 4, the older women are to teach the younger women. The older men, be an example for the younger men. 1 Timothy 5, verse 1 and 2, do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father, and to the younger men as brothers, and the older women as mothers, and the younger as sisters, with all verity or purity. Leviticus 19:32, rise up and honor the gray-headed one. These are all found in our Christian faith. And so when you convert someone to the faith from the military, it's not as hard a lesson to say, yes, and here's how God structures the church. Here's how he structures it. Husbands are to be the leaders in the family. We're also supposed to have elders, and Christ is the head of the church. They look at that and they say, you know what, I really can accept that a lot better. And so that's one less obstacle to remove. I know that I've had people before that I've led to Christ, and they may have come from a different background. Maybe they came from a background that was rebellious to authority. That's a lot harder down the road, because later when the elders want to go talk with them and say, hey, we're guarding over your soul. Well, I don't respect anybody. Nobody tells me what to do. That's not the Christian attitude. It is found in the military, though. And so, here's the second reason. Soldiers are typically not appreciated for what they go through. Now, let me repeat that again. Soldiers are not typically appreciated for what they go through. Now, I know they pay soldiers. I know that they have some good health insurance benefits. But let me tell you, what they go through to get that and what they might pay somebody else in the private world, way, way different. In Matthew 28, 12, and 13, we find soldiers who were willing to accept money and lie about that somebody came by and stole the body of Jesus. That was kind of an accepted practice back then, because they didn't pay the soldiers much. They have the saying, so-and-so is not worth his salt. They used to pay some of the soldiers in salt to preserve meat. And if they say that soldier is not worth his salt, they would hold that back from their pay. They just weren't paid that much. So much so that exploitation of others could be common if it wasn't checked. In fact, John the Baptist said in 3:14 of Luke, some soldiers came to him questioning, saying, what about us? What shall we do? He said, do not take money from anyone or by force, or accuse anyone falsely, and be content with your wages. It's actually a charge that John the Baptist gave to them, because oftentimes they are underpaid for what they actually have to do. They're not shown a certain level of respect. You know, if they paid every soldier what CEOs of Fortune 500 companies made, people would say, hey, you're a soldier, look at that. Man, you're like one of the top paid people. The respect isn't there. You know, when the soldiers came back from Vietnam, you know, for all that they went through, to be spit on by some, just completely uncalled for. And they're just not shown, they're not appreciated for what they really go through, particularly the ones that go overseas. Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very tough issue. They go to places where we would never want to go through, us in the non-service world, and we need to show our appreciation for them. Also, soldiers tend to hold a religious worldview. Not all, but most soldiers hold to a religious worldview. The nature of a soldier is danger, and because you've heard the saying, there are no atheists in foxholes, Doug didn't make that up, okay? No atheists in foxholes means what it says. Oftentimes, soldiers are facing a deadly situation that exposes them to peril. For that is in the title of the job, a soldier. Anyone who goes into the military thinking they're going to sell cars or do something that might not be as dangerous. If you sell cars, if you think your job is as dangerous as a soldier, then go sell them in Baghdad and then come back and talk. It's a very difficult thing to be a soldier, and it's even more difficult with the fragility of life and the implications thereof that's on their hearts and minds, usually on a daily basis, for them to think in a non-religious way, it's just really not going to exist. I have pictures up here of caskets of soldiers. You know, I'm telling you, you ask a U.S. soldier, particularly today, do they have a friend? Do they have a relative? Do they have somebody they love that was maimed in an attack or died? How many 19-year-olds do you know, or 20-year-olds that may have had 10 of their friends die? And I'm not talking with drugs or something. I'm talking 10 healthy friends die. There's no way they can really hold to a world that does not deal with the afterlife in one way or another. And that's what they mean by no atheist in foxholes. It is with this thought in mind that Paul spoke, 2 Timothy 2, verse 3, suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Is with the loss of Jonathan that the soldier David sang in 2 Samuel 1, 25 through 27. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? Jonathan is slain on your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women. How have the mighty fallen and the weapons of the war perished? You see David pouring his heart out to God for the hurt that his good friend and fellow soldier for the cause, Jonathan, had died. It's with this thought in mind that General Josiah, deeply hurt in the loss of life at the Battle of Ai, when he, 7 verse 6, when he tore his clothes and fell on his face, he hurt for his fellow soldiers. The love of Christ must permeate the front lines of Camp Hill, Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, the U.S., Baghdad, and even Afghanistan. It is our calling as a Christian to seek out and find future soldiers for Christ. It is more than likely near or on their mind of the soldier because they experience these things. And to not have that into account, that nine times out of ten, you go to a Harvard college and you say, what do you think about God? They're going to be hostile to God. But you go to a front line, or you go to people who have been humbled by service to their country and the loss of life of someone they cared about deeply and were comrades with. Nine times out of ten, they're going to say, I really hold a religious worldview, because being a soldier, they can't afford not to. Cornelius the centurion in Acts 10 and 11. There was a military commander named Cornelius, and he was in a town named Caesarea, and he was a devout man, one that feared God, prayed always, gave much alms to the poor. He was of the Italian cohort, which meant he lived a life of discipline, and he had seen much as a soldier. He had yet to convert to Christianity, though, being only at best a devout admirer of the Jewish faith. But all that changed when a man named Peter reached out to him with a message of salvation that was God-ordained. Cornelius did not delay in his response to the gospel message and was baptized into Christ, both he and his household. There is an example of a man who is devoutly religious. He was in the service. He was a leader in the service. He had seen much, done much, knew what he wanted, and when it was offered, he took it without hesitancy. And I believe, I am persuaded, we must figure this into the equation when considering a ministry that reaches out to the military. Also, soldiers are generally of a disciplined nature. Soldiers are generally of a disciplined nature. From the moment that they are recruited through the experience of basic training and advanced individual training, the mission field, and even following their life after the service, you can see discipline in the life of a soldier. In fact, it was common in the Bible to parallel the life of a disciple of Christ and that of a soldier. That is not by mistake. 2 Timothy 2 verse 4, no soldier in active service entangles himself with the affairs of everyday life so that he may please the one who enlisted him as a soldier. 1 Peter 2:11, beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. He would say in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3 and 4, though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. He says, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful from the destruction of fortresses. You know, Paul and Peter and John, they would use examples of how there's a war going on. And they would use language that a disciplined soldier would understand. And when we're reaching out to the soldier, we are extending ourselves to a person who understands what discipline is. Do you think when you line up 100 men swinging rifles in their fine apparel and the way they've been trained and the service that they've rendered, that they're not disciplined? An undisciplined soldier is weeded out on the battlefield. An undisciplined soldier is weeded out in basic training. They actually have to test the soldier before the game. Chad Kemp was sworn in this week. Put you on the spot, brother. He was sworn in this week. He goes away for basic training. Okay? And they have to take a test. They have to run so fast, and they have to do so many sit-ups and push-ups. They have to meet certain parameters. You cannot be undisciplined and get in the service. It will weed you out big time. My son is a recruiter. He'll tell me sometime, I got this one guy and, you know, he's too heavy. This guy is like 70 pounds overweight. It kept him out of the service. Another person may not have had good enough grades. They got to take written tests. They're weeded out. They understand from day one there's a level of discipline that must be carried out. And that discipline only increases as you get further into it. And so, when they come into Christ, you're reaching out to men and women of discipline, families of discipline. And you explain to them that being a Christian, we have discipline. Do you think they might be a little more receptive? Yes, they are. Number five, soldiers are sometimes desperately hurting for fellowship. They're hurting for fellowship. The battlefield can be one of the loneliest places on earth because the people that you love the most are thousands of miles away. A young man fresh out of high school, more than not, as he goes to basic training, and he's receiving the compassion of a drill sergeant. I was there. And I didn't grow up in a godly family. And I remember thinking to myself, I want my mommy. When they said, pick a spot out on that wall and stare at it. I still remember that spot in that platoon. I remember being dropped for push-ups. I remember having to do pull-ups to eat. I remember getting all the food I could ever want to eat in basic training, but only having 5 minutes to do it. And three of it was in line. And you start hurting for fellowship. Now imagine if you were out on the battlefield. Christians and potential future Christians must know that we care about them, and we don't care how far you're out, you're not out of our reach, and you're not out of Christ's reach. You know, Jesse ministered to his sons on the front line of the battle with the Philistines. Remember all his sons, they were out for battle, and they sent David, 1 Samuel chapter 17. Here, take these supplies to them. Go check on your brothers. That was called a military ministry. Now, I think David wanted to go to that, but he didn't really have a choice, so Jesse had his own draft. Go check on your brothers. For Saul and they and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Go see your brother. Take these supplies with you. See what's happening. Report back to me. Soldiers are often gone for a very long time in a strange land. We could do something. And we'll not go unrewarded or unappreciated. Now I want to take 5 minutes. I'm going to ask two soldiers we have from our congregation. Chris Lampson, he spent time overseas. And then Keith, who also is going to go spend more time overseas. Now, I want you to look at it through a soldier's and active soldier's perspective on what a military ministry can mean. So why don't you both come up here? And Chris, why don't you come up first? And then Keith. I want you to see and hear from their mouths and lips what it means. Come up here this way. I want you to get on recording. Name, rank, and serial number? No.
Come on. Spending time in Iraq sums it up. I don't really know how to explain it to people that haven't ever seen it. It's kind of like being out in the middle of a blow dryer, a big blow dryer, but to find it, people that think like you, that feel the same way about God you do, can be difficult, because most of us, when we have free time, try to keep to ourselves, you know, try to wind down and find something in ourselves that we can go to, that way we can separate from where we're at, you know, because we are away from our families, you know. I was 1 month married to my wife, gone to a land, a foreign land that, you know, I just couldn't even fathom until I saw it. It took me 3 months to find people that thought like I did. And, you know, that was getting care packages from my family and whatnot, you know, cookies, cakes, bread, whatever. But it wasn't, there was just something always missing. You know, I had my Bible with me, but I had to I studied by myself. It wasn't until I was talking to a guy in the unit next to me who just happened to be from 70 miles down the road in Texas, from a town called Abilene. And he happened to be a member of the church. Took me 3 months just to find that. And that happens to a lot of military members, especially those of us in the church, because the military likes to classify us into three different groups. You know, Protestant, Catholic, or Mormon. That's how they classify us. We don't really get a chance to try to work on our faith. I know in boot camp, I was fortunate enough to go to a place that actually had a Church of Christ service for us. Paris Island didn't have that because there wasn't a big Church of Christ congregation, a big enough one to commit to something like that. But it does. A ministry to the military would help them just to know, even if they got a recording of a sermon, or if they could stream it. I mean, they got 30 minutes to go to the computer and just stream it off the internet and listen to it. I know if I had something like that, it would have helped fill that void.
Thanks, Chris. Keith, could you come up here then? See, I could say what I want to say, but I think they could say it better. Keith flies planes.
I do not. I tell the guy who flies it where to go. All right, Doug asked me to put this together, and I kind of interpreted it as what is it like to be deployed, and how can you encourage or evangelize to people in that respect? And just listen to Chris. I mean, there's 48th Town Gap right here. There's a lot of examples of how you can reach out to soldiers right there. One example, Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, is a basic training camp, and there was a Church of Christ there in Waynesville, Missouri. They used to go out to the basic training. You know, you had, like you said, discipline. You had to go through the structure of chain of command, and you could go to the drill sergeants or their drill sergeant, master drill sergeant, and organize some way to get the soldiers off base on a Sunday and bring them to the morning service. And that was their mission in Waynesville, Missouri. They baptized several basic trainees there, and you know, some of them just wanted to get away from the base. Say, yeah, I'll get baptized, sure. And it gives them 2 hours off base, you know. But some of them, you know, don't even realize how many were reached. It's hard to say. But I put together, there's some experiences from my Army side. I was in the Army first, and I was deployed as a single person. And now I'm in the Air Force, the Air National Guard, and I'm married. So I'm going to speak to both. And my observations may not reflect all services or branches or individuals, but which recalls to me, some of you may have seen it, the Doonesbury little cartoon strip with the Air Force guy in the hotel with the clicker, and it's not working. He says, man, it really stinks here. And then the Army guy's in the foxhole and says, I love how it stinks here. And then you got the Marine, like Chris over there, that's in the foxhole with water up to his knees saying, I wish it would stink more. So that's kind of the perspectives of the services. So you never know how a person perceives things and interprets them and applies them in his life. But as a single surgeon sailor, that's the most vulnerable time spiritually. You're meeting new friends, new places. You're going new places. It's your first time really away. And as he alluded to, it's the more dangerous, the more religious that person becomes. So, because all the things, you know, as a soldier, you sign up, you know the risks. But when you're somewhere that's dangerous, you're seeing those risks come to fruition in the form of those caskets, in the form of injuries and hospitals. So people are more religious when they're deployed. They're looking for hope and encouragement. Sermons that talk about this kind of stuff, lessons and correspondence that give hope and encouragement. So how do you reach out? Get to know the surroundings. They have unit pride, units and nicknames, and their other peers. Get to know that. And I'd like to mention OPSEC, operational security here. You know, try not to ask how many people and where are you at, because that will... A soldier who is getting that kind of questions is going to become defensive. That's in their blood. That's in their training. They're not supposed to mention that kind of stuff, because you may be innocently asking, but you know it can be overheard at a conversation at dinner or something by somebody that wants to do the military harm or America harm. The subject could become very popular at mail call. Chris knows about this, cookies and things like that. As a single soldier, well, when you are anywhere, when you're in basic training, when you're in especially deployed, and you get a box, everybody's looking over your shoulder. And I remember in the Army, they did it formally. They lined you up in your ranks and the mail call, and then they brought stuff in. Chris Lamson, Keith Brannon, you know, letters going out. Ah, box. Doug Hamilton, what is this? I think I'll keep this off to the side and make you do push-ups for it. In the Air Force, it's not like that. It's just they got to throw it in a corner, you know, and you come in as you need to, because everybody's on crew rest and different schedules. But, you know, get to know the person. Make the care packages personal. What is that person like? What is that person's platoon? What are they called? What's a squad or a company? As, you know, there's 200 people here. A company's about 100. Maybe you can only support a platoon, which is usually about 32 people. Get to know them and make that person very popular. And as Doug said when he was talking to me, that could make that person, like Chris, accountable to representing Christianity when he's down in the dirt. So now everybody knows, oh, you got a congregation that sends you cookies. Yeah, you go to church. I heard you say something the other day that I wanted to ask you about. So it makes us accountable to representing Christianity. So adopt that squad, platoon, company. Find out what is scarce and hard to get. You know, you've seen the World War II movies with the Lucky Strikes. You know, everybody's trading for those things. I'm not saying send cigarettes, but I mean, find out what's hard to get and hard to come by. Send bulletins. Send the bulletin with prayer requests on there that says, I'm praying for the mighty Red Horse of the 201st Red Horse, and, you know, that's deployed. And they see that, you know, when they get their care package. Oh, wow, there's actually people reading this little newsletter that has us on here. As a married member, most concern is immediate family across the board. I mean, you guys are an asset to me and my family. That is the biggest thing. To be deployed and to know my family is taken care of, that's, as a married person, is the biggest thing. I can go about and do my job however hard it is, knowing that the family is going to be taken care of. And how do you do that? Keep things normal for them. Avoid reminding them of the situation that they're in, that their, you know, husband or wife is gone and is not coming back for a while. Now, that must be really rough. This must really stink for you. No, keep them busy. Keep them occupied. Keep their mind off of it. It makes time pass a lot faster. Provide a podcast or sermon. I think he's going to mention some stuff. This is a 21st century that even people in the foxholes have the iPods and the MP3 players. If they can download that stuff and listen to it in the foxhole, like I said, they become very religious in dangerous situations, and they may replay that and replay that over and over. Being a point of contact in a family emergency is great relief for a person. Like Miranda, we just had McKenna not too long ago, knowing that, you know, I'm gone and something could happen, that she could call on a few people at any time of the night or day, is a huge relief. For the non-church member that's married, again, the biggest concern is family. Offer to that member a point of contact for their family that they can go to. But go through that military member, because if they're gone and you go to that spouse that's there, they may get very defensive. Providing the care patches with personal stuff. You know, be personal, not impersonal. I'll talk to you in wrapping it up here. The avenues that the military has are several. Just three I want to mention. The family support group. This is something that all military units organize, but very few are very good. They're very underfunded, and they usually get pushed by the wayside. It's like the last priority. So there's a place where the church can really step in. The chaplain corps, mostly it's the chaplains are, it's a great asset for somebody seeking the Lord. If you have a chapel, sometimes you're deployed in a foxhole. They don't have a chapel there. You're at an outpost with 20 people, and they just don't have that as a priority. So it's very generic. The care packages and correspondence that come through the chaplain is, you know, like an eighth grade class writing a letter that just says, this is my project. I have to write to a soldier what the U.S. red, white, blue means to me. It's cute and everything, but it's not personal. And the USO and Red Cross, again, they're not very personal. They're underfunded, and usually emergencies only is where that helps the soldier. So these are just a few thoughts of what it's like to be deployed and how you could evangelize.
Thank you. Thanks, Keith. And Chris, I want to give you one example of a good ministry to the military in closing. Many years ago, there was a missionary that started a ministry that reached out to the military. It was kind of rough at first, but through consistent teaching and patience, it soon had paid off, and there were many new converts of soldiers that filled the congregation. And because they were really appreciative of authority, it wasn't long after that they had appointed elders in the congregation. They understood what leadership meant. These soldiers, including the retired ones with pensions, were very generous givers and absolutely loved the Lord. Many times they would take up special collections for the planting of other congregations in the neighboring areas. There was a time when the same missionary ventured into some foreign work and landed in some legal trouble for spreading the gospel in a hostile country. And can you believe that it was these converted roughneck soldiers that stood firmly by their comrade in Christ. They didn't back down a bit. They stood by him. They were so convicted with the gospel that they actually took up collections that provided all the needs until the legal issues were resolved. And there was so much love shown by this military congregation that the soldiers that guarded the missionary cell started to convert them. They started to convert because they saw the love that came from this other congregation, that the people guarding this man's cell started to convert and spread the gospel through there. And from then on, the missionary called this military congregation by endearing terms like comrades and fellow soldiers for the cause of Christ. This military mission work became one of the greatest success stories in the churches of Christ. You can read more about it in the book of Philippians if you want. Paul was the missionary, and Philippi was a colony established for retired military soldiers. He took the gospel to them, and they were receptive from the very beginning. As he worked down the Greek peninsula, they sent a gift more than once for his needs. When he was arrested and sent to trial for Rome, they sent Epaphroditus with a love offering that was, quote, more than enough for his need. And while he was chained under house arrest, the gospel became so well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard, secret service for Caesar, so much so that some from his own house, Caesar's own house, sent greetings back to this Philippian Christians. This all started with a military ministry that could not be overlooked even from the infancy of the church. They were indeed true comrades and fellow soldiers, as mentioned. In closing, I want to let you know about a test case we have. Chad will be, I believe, going to basic training on September 26th. Is that correct, Chad? When my son went to basic training, you made a big difference in his life, and I need to remind you that now. There are four items, very briefly, I want to cover that I like to focus on. But I like, a ministry is no good if there are not those who can minister. So I ask for your support of this. An internet-based worship. I talked with Richard Clark. We own the domain name where we could actually podcast our worship to where people can join their family in worship. We could send them portable Lord's Supper cups if they don't have them, email a bulletin, email a copy of the lesson, the manuscript, so that they have it right there. I was talking with a man from our water polo team. His son is the goalie. And he's over in Iraq now, and I told him that we're looking at doing something like that, and it may be possible for your family to come and join you in worship while you're over there. And his eyes just lit up at the thought of that. He gave me his card. And I still have it, and hopefully I'll be able to call him and let him know. Care packages and cards of encouragement. I can't tell you how many times my son and Adam, when he was at basic training, he said, "Dad, you know, everybody thinks I'm the most popular guy." He got so many cards from so many of you, and that meant a lot to him. Continuous prayer. There's nothing greater we could offer than prayer, but to know that we're consistently, as a group, praying for soldiers. I don't know about you, but Chad, you're going to need a lot of prayer when you go down to basic, trust me. They're going to eat you up because the tall ones, they single you out quick. So, brother, it's coming. We'll be sending you some prayer. Extension of other ministries for family members left behind. I was talking with another soldier who was back on leave, and he told me his wife went in to, while he was gone in the service, his wife needed a little break work. It ended up costing their family like nearly $1,000. And it was just some simple job that could have been done for about $100. And I told him, I said, when you go back, if your wife has anything that goes wrong with her car, we have a car ministry where we'll look at it And we'll make sure nobody takes advantage of your family while you're gone. Little things like that, where we extend ministries out to the others who are off defending our religious liberties that we have in this country, that are away. We can make a world of difference. And so that's what we have to offer this morning. It would be great if we had a needful ministry met by reaching out to military families. There are many of them. I want to take a quick count. Raise your hand if you served in any way in the military service. Raise your hand. We got quite a few of them. And you know many of them. There's a lot that aren't even here today. And so they know these things to be true. And if you would like to be involved in that ministry, talk to me, talk to Chris, talk to Keith, talk to Richard Clark. Let us know if you want to be involved in that. But we offer you an invitation now if you need to become a Christian, if you have not yet. By the way, we had two that were baptized this week. You'll hear about that in just a second. If you yourself would like to respond to the invitation, why don't you do so while we stand and sing?